Trevi Show on a Tuesday, February the 23rd of 2021. Happy to be with you talking some baseball today. Drew Silva from NBC Sports going to join me. I know folks are getting into their fantasy baseball drafts. We're going to talk big picture strategy with Drew. What are a couple of things you should focus on? We'll talk about pitching as we are in another unconventional year. Want to talk Cardinals bullpen and more with Drew Silva. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'll have a draft with Drew as well. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, Scoops with Danny Mac. Leave a review. Send me a screenshot at CHRABE on Twitter, CHRABE, and let us know what you think. You can also email me, Chris, at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. All right, so spring training underway. We're getting closer to games. Folks are getting in fantasy baseball drafts, and we say hello to Drew Silva from NBC Sports. You can go to NBCSports.com/edge. Also, check out the Circling the Bases podcast. Now, you guys have a ton of content getting ready for the baseball season, fantasy drafts coming up. So I think we've finally gotten into the rhythm that even if it doesn't feel like normal spring training, we at least are on track right now. Do you feel on track, Drew Silva?
I do. It feels relatively normal to me, like through the first week and a half or so of, you know, workouts. Have you noticed necessarily a big change? You're a media man. I thought like maybe with limited media access and kind of information, you kind of only learn what the teams tell you because they have these like afternoon or late morning Zoom press conference essentially, and that's what all the news comes out of. So the one thing I've noticed is that like after 3 p.m. or so far at least, maybe it'll change when the games get started, but like there's kind of no more information.
Yeah, and I feel like maybe that was the case in the past, like from a scheduling standpoint, you know, by 2-3 o'clock everyone's gone, but you would have, you know, stuff that you talk to guys about throughout the day and more stuff would come out. I guess the biggest thing that I've noticed to this point is that we don't have everyone taking and then tweeting the same picture of guys fielding ground balls or stretching because you can't get in to take pictures. And B, the thing that I know I'm going to miss are the really, really cool stories like, you know, Derek spending a couple of days with someone and taking pictures of, you know, the new grip for their, you know, four seamer and the action on it and how that pitch evolved. Like, I don't know, I'll probably at some point, like every month and a half, I get an angry person on Twitter tweeting me underneath the year-old interview I did with Flaherty in his car telling us to wear masks. But like that kind of access, like one-on-one with guys, if you get off, you know, off the complex grounds a little bit and, you know, get into a more comfortable environment, that kind of stuff will be missed. But you know what? Those guys are missing stuff too, I'm sure. They're not able to do maybe all the things that they would do in Florida, and it's a lot of downtime and a lot of time working out and going through the protocols. So as long as we get to games, I will not complain. That's been the thing I've tried to remember, is that can always be a lot worse. Like, you know, last year after the restart, people were third game in after we didn't have baseball for 4 months complaining that it was 3 hours in the seventh inning. Like, let's just, as long as we get to baseball, I'll deal with whatever else.
Right. Yeah. And I'll miss like your walk and talks with the players, or like Jimmy the Cat Hayes going into players' apartments. I'm sure
the classic cat look in the fridge move.
Oh yeah. That is classic cat. Go to bat.
But it's that kind of stuff, and like the access, and listen, I think teams are getting better, and great reporters will still do great reporting. And it's been fascinating in a way to see how the industry has changed a little bit, see how guys try to use, you know, their access and their relationships. And maybe that's a little more important, Drew. Like, I know I've had a bunch of guys on my show in the off season, and it's because of personal relationships, and the cream will rise to the top, so to speak. And, you know, I don't know what you do with your time if you're standing outside a fence trying to watch workouts. But I think that, you know, great coverage in the midst of adversity sometimes lends itself to even better coverage in those circumstances. So we'll see, man. We'll see.
Yeah. And I think the younger players who kind of at this point grew up on social media realize that they have a path here to sort of build their own brand, so to speak. I know that's kind of a silly buzzword, but it's true. And I think even the older guys, like you look at what Adam Wainwright does with Twitter as a guy who's pushing 40 years old. There's a way to kind of put your personality out there. And some guys are more.
How about accessibility and relatability?
Sure. And some guys want to do that more than others, and that's fine. I mean, I don't think Mike Trout is really interested in it, which maybe that's to, you know, Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball's marketing wing's chagrin. But now I guess they have a guy in Fernando Tatis Jr. who's willing to hop on SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt and be on the cover of video games and, like, you know, have his own standalone Gatorade commercials. And he's kind of taken over as the face of baseball, and got that 14-year, $340 million contract to stick in San Diego probably for, you know, the remainder of his career, perhaps.
Outside of St. Louis, who are your favorite personalities in baseball right now?
Trevor Bauer, of course.
Like, in terms of, like, we always want athletes to be interesting, right? Like, to not give the same, well, we just got to take it one game at a time. You know, we got to move on to the next one. We've got to focus on what's in front of us, get to the hard area, whatever. We don't want that. And then it seems like guys sometimes are looked at as, you know, controversial if they speak their minds. There's nothing better than Bauer speaking his mind and giving, I think, the average fan insight into what these guys think about and what these guys talk about amongst themselves every day.
Yeah, I mean, with Bauer, he's maybe not like as, I don't want to put him down. He's not maybe not as like thoughtful as he believes himself to be and like open-minded as he believes himself to be. I've like stopped going down Twitter rabbit holes as a policy. Just, I don't want to be mad online anymore. You know, but like there's stories of him kind of harassing people and that's not cool, but yeah, I mean, at least he provides some interesting content. Personalities around baseball. I love Jack Flaherty. And I know he's a bit controversial among the Cardinals fan base, or I guess a certain, you know, a loud vocal minority on Twitter, who I think kind of misunderstand where he's coming from, especially when it came to that arbitration victory, how he sort of gloated about it on Twitter. And I think that was more about the relationship between the MLBPA and MLB owners rather than a relationship with the team necessarily, like his teammates and the front office. I think it more had to do with the upcoming CBA talks than anything, and how the players want the service time changed. But if you're a casual fan and you don't understand how service time works and the arbitration process and how, you know, the Cardinals renewed him at just over the major league minimum when they could have given him a bit more and he didn't want to sign that. You know, if you don't know all those intricacies of those negotiations, then you might think that he's just kind of a jerk. But I think he's outspoken and a young, really important voice in the baseball world that needs to probably get a little bit more diverse.
Yeah, it's, I think, an interesting time for baseball because of all of the star power that you have. And, you know, this might be a weird comparison, but I almost think that, like, what the PGA Tour is on the cusp of or what they're going through with superstar players, with the level of play as high as it's ever been, but also using their digital platforms and their players embracing the chance to use their platforms to connect with a new generation of fans, there's an opportunity there for baseball, you know, because there has been a I think, certain way that the league has gone about marketing players themselves, accessibility of, you know, video and digital property online. You could speak to that as well as anyone. And, you know, if you embrace people and young people, the way they share content, the way they consume content, I think there's a lot to be gained there.
Yeah. And again, there are just so many more avenues for players to dig into if they want to. And if they don't want to, that's cool. Like, I don't think a Dustin Johnson really cares about, you know, showing his personality and hopping onto podcasts and, like, you know, getting in with certain podcast hosts and having them pump him up. But other guys, it's a way to launch your marketability in general. Maybe you're never going to win the Masters, but you can still have a really strong brand in the game of golf. And yeah, golf has been really smart. I think they've, you know, whoever's leading that charge over the last pandemic year, golf was one of the activities that you felt like you could do safely with friends and kind of keep your distance and be healthy. And, you know, you saw that in the numbers, that the number of rounds that were played were at an all-time high. And I think ratings for golf have been at an all-time high, even on, like, you know, events that don't have the most stacked of fields. And a lot of that is probably gambling too. I mean, you can credit the rise of the NFL to gambling. And, you know, I think what we did converting Roto World into NBC Sports Edge, we're kind of, you know, putting a hug around gambling content that we already had at NBC Sports and trying to use that megaphone to boost everyone in general. I'm now using buzzwords because I just got off a work call where they talked about our brand strategies.
No, I'm really curious, and especially about the DFS stuff, and I'll ask you that in a minute, but do you think Max Homa set a record for most texts received from media members on Sunday?
It sounded like, yeah, Amanda Balionis in the post-match interview was like, I was texting with your mom and texting with your wife. Yeah, it seems like they were really building him up, but I don't know a ton.
He's an accessible guy, man, and yeah. He goes and he understands relationships. And listen, it's a two-way street, right? Like with anyone in any job, I don't care who it is, but if someone is good to you and you establish a genuine relationship with them and it's a two-way street, then, you know, generally your view of them is going to be favorable. You're going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Like I always talked about Joe Maddon and the way that he works the room and the way that he works relationships, like that probably did a lot of good for him in Chicago, especially down the stretch there with the media, because even when things weren't going great, he still kind of got the benefit of the doubt because he was relatable. He was accessible. And, you know, there was never really any type of a contentious relationship that could be carried over into coverage or a column or a radio segment.
Yeah, I mean, Maddon would have a glass of wine and you know, in the clubhouse post game and be very open about his thoughts. And I think that's cool. I think it's cool that, you know, media content is heading in that direction where it's a little bit.
Same thing happened when Schilt took over. It was like, wow, this guy will walk us through his thought process of why he went through that sequence of pitchers.
Right. And I think because the veil has come down a bit on what sports is and the business of sports. And so it's, you know, you can talk in manager speak and it's kind of boring and you can get by in that way. But it's a lot more interesting to learn of personalities. And like you said, the fan base and the media is going to give you more benefit of the doubt if they feel like they know who you actually are.
Drew Silva is with us from NBC Sports as we get ready for spring training games to get started here in the next week. Again, NBCSports.com/edge is where you can go. Also, really, really recommend the podcasts. Check out the fantastic offerings, all of them, at NBC Sports Edge, but the Circling the Bases podcast is where you can find Drew. Let's talk about where we are right now, Drew, from a, I guess, fantasy perspective. And like big picture, have you personally, and you think the baseball industry, seen the momentum shift towards the DFS like other sports have? Or has the curve been different compared? I think, you know, looking at what baseball does every single day, you would think that not only for avid players, but casual players, especially as our general buffet of sports offerings has been altered a bit. And maybe that would be more appealing to people this year. Are you seeing a shift in that at all?
It's a really good philosophical question that I think about a lot, probably too much. So I don't think baseball necessarily lends itself really well to DFS. And when FanDuel started, NBC Sports owns a chunk of that. So we would get money to play with. And I had read into it. I follow a lot of guys who do baseball and the game is not set up. Like the sport itself is not set up for gambling in that fashion, because you can spend, you know, $5,000 top price on Mike Trout and he'll go 0-for-4 with 2 strikeouts. And it's not a big deal. Like you don't blink an eye. You know, in the baseball world, because the best player in baseball can go 0-for-4 one day and, you know, hit a couple homers the next. If you were to,
it's not like DJ missing a cut.
Yeah, yet. Or like you spend, you know, $12,000 on Steph Curry and he doesn't hit a 3 all night. Like, you know, you would be crushed. If Trout goes 0 for 4. So it's just a little bit different. I think that season long fantasy baseball is still king, at least when it comes to baseball. And it's kind of become a niche thing, which isn't great for my job necessarily, but the people who really like it are really hardcore about it and will buy premium products to get different viewpoints on it and to get your rankings and projections. So that's been good for us in general to kind of have a nice floor of players who are really serious about playing it. I don't know. Maybe someone will find an angle on baseball DFS. I'm sure there's some math wizards in Germany or the Eastern Bloc who don't even have never watched baseball in their life, but have figured out an algorithm that works. There are, Roto Grinders is a website that I've subscribed to in the past, and they have all sorts of things like weather and park factors and even umpires that you can plug in. And it'll give you some values on a given day. And sometimes those will work. Over the long haul, I personally have not found a lot of success with it. There aren't really those edges. Yeah, it's a bit random, like baseball itself on a given day. If you were playing like week-long games, and I know they have some of those now, where you can actually do snake drafts, that probably makes a lot more sense. So I think that the sites themselves, FanDuel and DraftKings and whoever else is out there, are figuring out that maybe we need to treat baseball in a little bit of a different
way. Yeah, and there's not really
way.
Like in football or even basketball, the guy who could come off the bench or based on an expected game script who could get a ton of playing time,
right,
who would be very, very low owned, because
you might have like the min price guy who's batting leadoff at Coors Field, like, but are you really expecting him to do a lot? Probably not. Like,
well, and people will be on that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
I wonder, maybe the content and the premium content and what the people who are really, really into it, especially the season long, tell me if you've seen a shift in this, especially with uncertainty about the minor leagues and uncertainty about teams' payrolls. If we're seeing teams be more aggressive with younger players and some of their top prospects, is there even more of a market for not just information about prospects, but how those guys could translate immediately to the big league level and immediately to the fantasy world?
Yeah,
like Nolan, Nolan Gorman, for instance. If the Cardinals hadn't made the Arenado trade, or maybe still moving forward, or Libertor, like if those guys suddenly are in the mix from a fantasy perspective where they weren't a couple of years ago.
Absolutely, prospect content has shot up through the roof because those hardcore fantasy players want to know everything about the guys who are coming up before their competition does it. We hired a full-time prospects guy, Christopher Crawford, 4 years ago, and he does a great job. Yeah, in general, like baseball pods on Twitter does this bracket every year where they seed out 64 baseball podcasts. This guy's crazy. We've had him on our show. Great dude. And then like runs a whole tournament with Twitter polls, and it's insane. But the prospect podcasts make it far because they have hardcore fans that listen to them every week and want to learn about these guys before everyone,
and want to be the first to know.
Exactly, before everyone in their league does. You have like the obvious people at the top, Nolan Gorman, some of the Cardinals guys, Dylan Carlson, Wander Franco this year with the Rays, Jared Kelenic, who's been a kind of in the news lately with the Mariners chairman or I guess team president CEO resigning the other day, which is, I guess, something we could discuss if you've been tracking that story. But yeah, I mean, people want to know about these young players, and that's definitely.
And like last year, it could have been like Cody Whitley for the Cardinals, right?
Sure,
like
yep.
someone like that,
Someone who's a bit off the radar too. Yeah,
right. But who makes a huge impact because of their role and because of what they do really well, and also because of the circumstances of last year.
Yeah, and there is kind of a game script in a sense with baseball because of that. Like, oh, let's look at this guy situationally. Does he have a path to the major leagues? Does he have a path to a decent lineup spot? That's something I've been thinking about more and more this year, especially with the short year we had last year. So trying to analyze that data and like average draft positions are out of whack right now. And a lot of that is because people are giving too much credit to what a player did last year or not giving enough credit to what they did in 2019. Then maybe they struggled in 2020. Did they have COVID? Like, can you see in the data that he was a fatigued player? Juan Mincata of the White Sox is a guy like that who had a really rough 2020, but he came into summer camp with COVID. He got diagnosed during intake testing. Jesus Luzardo of the A's, another breakout guy I like who's been on prospect list, but is kind of a forgotten man. So yeah, there are avenues to look at where you can find values, especially this year, because there's not as much groupthink, which is a problem sometimes in the fantasy landscape.
All right. So let's like take a certain exercise, and for the purposes of game script, let's look at the Cardinals bullpen, right? And let's say that Jordan Hicks is obviously back and the assumption that he's healthy and good to go. However, because of the season and because of everything and because of the fact that we're still in a pandemic, you imagine he will be treated even, you know, more even differently than if he was in a normal year coming off Tommy John a couple of years ago. So how then would you start to look at the rest of the Cardinals bullpen, and how then would you start to evaluate the guys who will potentially get the most opportunities to make an impact on a fantasy roster?
Yeah, the Cardinals bullpen. I write the bullpen report for our online draft guide, which is a premium product, but there's just so many tools in there. If anyone wants to check that out at NBC Sports Edge Plus, the Cardinals bullpen is just impossible to sort through. So if we're going to game script this out, I would say if Jordan Hicks is healthy and, you know, back close to his 2018, early 2019 form, you know, towards the end of Grapefruit League play, I would put him in as the closer. I also think that Mike Schilt last year, with all the chaos around having to change the roster seemingly every other day, got pretty comfortable with mixing and matching. Far more than like Mike Matheny would have, or I think he's an analytical manager who also knows he's probably a better communicator than a lot of managers, and is a better read of how guys are feeling in general, emotionally, physically. I give him a lot of credit for that element that
he's coached a lot of these guys at a lot of different levels.
Exactly. That's a great point. And a lot of stuff that can't necessarily be quantified or like data analyzed. But I would guess Jordan Hicks, I would put him number one. And I think he's going behind Giovanni Gallegos in drafts, which I get, because Gallegos at this point is proven capable of handling the ninth inning, and the numbers are awesome. I'm intrigued by Alex Reyes, who looked fantastic last year, obviously in a short sample. But if he's throwing like that in Grapefruit League play, and I think they've already said that he's not going to be tried as a starter this spring, they might, you know, kick that down to next year and maybe try it again. So he's going to be in that bullpen with that kind of stuff. The Cardinals bullpen is quietly nasty. I think I tweeted that the night of the Nolan Arenado trade, which was a Friday night, and I'd had a few beverages. But I had always kind of thought that, but wasn't willing to say it yet, because I didn't really like the rest of the roster. But once you get Arenado in the fold, you know, feeling a little confident with a few Bud Lights in you. Like Ryan Helsley, John Gant was so solid last year. Tyler Webb from the left side is solid. Ponce de Leon will probably be in the bullpen. Cody Whitley, who you just mentioned. I just said like nine guys who I all really like, and they've got some young arms. Yeah. Yep.
Well, and the ability to weaponize those guys when you're playing from ahead too completely changes everything.
And I mean, this is not going to be a traditional year in terms of starter workloads, because, you know, the top end guys who made it all the way through the playoffs, like, topped out at 75 innings, you know? So I don't see even the greatest aces going 200 innings this year. I think they're going to be in the 150, 160 range. So you're going to need some swingmen types. And the Cardinals have,
or almost maybe some built-in piggybacks, right?
Yeah, built-in piggybacks.
And keep like John Gant on a schedule, for instance.
Sure. Yeah. Have him be a 3 to 4 inning guy every week, or, you know, maybe twice a week. And so I think we're going to see a lot of that. And the Cardinals have done pretty well with that, because they have all of these young arms coming through the system. They've, you know, obviously had some issues at identifying their own position player talent, but no one can argue that they don't, you know, grow pitchers on trees, you know? So I think they have an advantage to where they have a lot of young arms who, you know, through all the chaos last year, got some major league experience. I think that'll really help them in the long run. They're not going to be scared coming up, you know, for a week long stretch to help out and carry some workload.
Drew Silva is with us from NBC Sports Edge. All right. Last thing before we get to a quick draft of our own, if you were giving someone right now, as we sit getting ready for spring games to start, just like the one or two most important things, just simple thoughts or keys, if you could boil it down to that, as they're starting the process of getting into their drafts, aside from all of the content at NBC Sports Edge, with this year, as you said, maybe not a one-off year, but maybe like a half-off year, what are like the one or two bullet points that you think people need to keep in mind as they start getting into draft season?
The one thing I've noticed doing a lot of mock drafts so far, I did one real draft so far, is you want to lock in two aces, I would say. Guys that are going to get big time workloads this year, you know, relative to the rest of the field, because after, I would say, like the first two, three tiers of starting pitchers, there is just a lot of guys who feel like they're about the same. And so I would say that's a key to lock in some starting pitchers, because power is so prevalent. We'll see what this de-juiced baseball looks like. I don't really know how to analyze that yet. I don't know how to build that into my analysis, but you can get power late. So I would prioritize starting pitching. And then I don't know what to say about relievers. But if you can find a way to get two aces and two guys that you are sure are going to be the closer on a team, are going to get save opportunities, because those are rare. I think I only like about five closers this year. And that's a tough task. So I'm telling you to just draft pitching in with six of your first top 10 picks, which can seem scary. But there are multi-category guys on offense that I think you can get late. And I believe this year, with the workload concerns in general around baseball, it's going to be a huge advantage to have some reliable aces and reliable closers.
Drew Silva, check out the Circling the Bases podcast, all the content at NBC Sports Edge. As we get ready for baseball, let's pop into a quick draft of our own, if you don't mind. We did, we did fast food side items. We did non-alcoholic beverages last week. And today, all these, by the way, are at scoopsatdannymac.com. Today, I thought we will do Desert Island. And by that, I mean you're stuck. These are the only ones you'll be able to watch, TV series. So we're each going to pick four TV series, and that catalog, those four series, are all that you have moving forward. So you need to factor in everything. Obviously, the quality of the show, but the volume of the show, rewatchability, all of that. And as always, you are the guest. You will pick first. Four rounds, non-snake. Drew, you are on the clock.
I wanted to criticize your draft from yesterday.
Okay, go ahead. We did, Chris Ranji and I did sit down casual chain eateries.
So I didn't get a chance to listen to the episode yet. I've just been busy. I'm sure you laid out the terms. Does this mean like you have to have a server? Essentially,
yeah, you have a server, you order off a menu, you sit down. Gotcha. But it's a chain, and like no tablecloths on the table, so like you know, anything from like a Maggiano's, like Ruth's Chris, like anything like that and up is off the table.
Okay, that maybe explains it a bit. So even like a
Ranji went Cheesecake Factory, TGI Fridays, Buffalo Wild Wings, and Red Lobster. I went Chili's, Olive Garden, Red Robin, and PF Chang's.
Well, I like Chili's. I think it's a little bit underrated. And actually, Red Robin would be maybe my number one pick here.
So is there a place we left off the board that you feel like was snubbed?
No, honestly, because you laid out those rules, like I was going to say like Texas Roadhouse is a good pick.
That's solid. Yeah. Like Texas Roadhouse, Outback was left off. Again, it comes down to, I tried to get each of my places, I think, do one thing really, really, really well. Like Chili's. Mm-hmm. I love like the bar scene. I think their chips and salsa are the best in the game, but like they do like just burgers and like fajitas, two things you can't overthink, really well. Olive Garden does, you know, like the salad and breadsticks, and then just your standard, you know, meat and potatoes, Italian dish, Red Robin, unlimited fries. Like each of my places, I feel like do something really well. I feel like Ranji reached a little with Buffalo Wild Wings, because like I think the food's hit or miss.
Oh, it's miss. I mean,
yeah, and like you can get like okay, like wings there, but like nothing else is like really that good. It's expensive. Like, so
it is a fun place to hang out, though, I guess. If
it, see, exactly. And part of our conversation yesterday was about the social aspect. And by the way, thanks for listening yesterday. The social aspects of sports. And like, that's a place where you go to more like watch a game with a bunch of people rather than like actually look at the weird menu.
All right. I was really just stalling for time so I could.
Cheesecake Factory, great number one pick because it's a 42-page menu.
Yeah, I was going to say, I haven't been there in a long time, but I remember being a little overwhelmed. I'm like, I thought they just did like cheesesteaks and real steaks, but
not right. Even cheesesteaks, cheesecakes, Drew.
Cheesecakes, I'm sorry. I was really stalling.
They probably have cheesesteaks.
I was stalling for time to think of good TV.
Okay.
Because you never give me, well, you never give me any hints as to what these drafts are.
Dude, I told you before we started taping. You've had 38 minutes.
But then I had to come up with a bunch of great baseball takes.
All right, do you want me to pick first?
You give me teases on your Iggy takedowns, your Iggy audio postcards, but no teases on what drafts we're gonna do.
Okay, tomorrow, I got two words for you, Chase Richards.
Yes, it's about time that story was. Dived into a little more. All right.
Shout out to The Morning After. Shout out to Tim McKernan and Sound Story, by the way. If you want to sign up for Sound Story, I'm doing them now. Dan McLaughlin's doing them. Tim, of course, go to mysoundstory.com.
We could do a weekly segment just breaking down TMA, best of TMA episodes. But I don't know if that's in line with the scoops by Danny Mac mission statement.
No, we're all buddies. Yeah. We're all buddies. I fill in over there.
All right.
All right, the time has come, and I'm going to need a show.
All right, number one pick, The Office.
Great pick.
I probably watched it four times through already, so maybe there's some risk if I am on a desert island that I would just get tired of it. But I haven't been tired of it yet, and you find little things when you do rewatch. You kind of – like Creed has become my favorite character. Just such
Creed and Meredith, like stuff like that.
Yeah, Meredith. Just like subtle things that maybe through your first watch you're like, oh, those people are weird and kind of annoying, but then you realize like that's where the true comedy lies in those moments. Yeah,
I find that the writing is so good and the improvisational acting is so good that when you're watching it at different times, like. You have different perspective, obviously, and the jokes hit in different ways.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's completely rewatchable. And there's so much of it, too. Like, I don't know, the British Office was what, one season, two season? And the American Office has, like, I would say close to 300 episodes, maybe more.
Yeah. And I even have enjoyed the really later episodes, the last couple of seasons that I didn't necessarily watch.
I'm with you, man. Yeah, I totally wrote those off as like, oh, they're just mailing it in. But rewatching,
I've got
them,
a different appreciation.
Same,
yeah.
Same.
Especially the way they resolve the show. Okay, so The Office is number one. And that kind of affects my strategy because is there going to be a run on comedy or do I just stick to my best available? I've got to go Breaking Bad, number one.
Probably my favorite show of all time.
Rewatchability and not as like the thing about The Office that you've got going for you, I can jump into any episode from any season at any point and watch it as a standalone, watch it for 20 minutes before bed, watch a couple in a row while I'm doing work. You can't really do that with Breaking Bad, but I'm going to invest in a high upside pick with my number one, probably my favorite show as well. Breaking Bad is my top pick.
It has such a great look and it's so well done that I feel like you could appreciate it in different ways in different, you know, watch throughs, you know,
I've really never rewatched it.
Yeah.
I've only watched it once and I binged the first like whatever five seasons and then caught up to it and watched the last one live. So I have been saving my rewatch and I think it's probably time. So I'll probably do that soon. I've been saving it like a fine bottle of wine for a special occasion.
All right. My second pick, and I'm sure this will be a controversial one. I'm going with Diners, Drive-Ins and Dives with,
oh my God.
Guy Fieri.
Are you serious?
Guy Fieri, one of the most, he's on my Mount Rushmore of people who get way too much crap. You can have the spiked hair and the
I've got nothing against him. I give him credit.
Yeah, I think he's an American treasure. You can feel one way or the other about his personality, but I think that personality helps with his interaction with these, you know, diners, drive-ins and dive owners and cooks who aren't necessarily used to television. He does great work for charity. But just beyond that, there are probably 500 plus episodes. They're all different.
You know what? This is a very good point. You just changed the game because this is not a ranking of the best TV shows ever.
No.
This is, you only have four and these are all you can watch forever.
Yep. And if I'm on the couch and I've got nothing to watch, there's like no sports on and I just want to scroll through my phone even and put something on, it's always Triple D. That's my number two.
Wow. Now Food Network shows are in the mix. HGTV is in the mix. Reality shows are in the mix. Wow. Okay. Oh, man.
Here's a question.
My head's about to explode. Like, right now, I could go Chopped. I could go Survivor. I could go back to the drama well. I could go another comedy that's had a great run in syndication. Oh, man, that is – the show just advanced at this moment. The draft just advanced at this moment.
If we do a TMA-based podcast, we should have Buck Swope on it as well.
God, my head just literally exploded. Silva, you dirty dog. You had that ace up your sleeve, and I don't know if you realize the way that you just changed.
Yeah, don't edit out
the butterfly effect
either. Don't edit it out.
Of course not. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm on my heels a bit. The clock is running down. I've got to make a pick. I'm going to stick with my original game script, even though things have gotten a little a little helter skelter, and I think for my number two, I'm not gonna overthink it. I'm gonna go Seinfeld number two, but I'm shook all of a sudden.
Can't argue with Seinfeld. That's a ton of episodes as well. That was back when they were making.
It's kind of a boring pick. It's not really like a high upside pick. But I need to get my office. You know, I need to get the what I can throw on at any time, the palate cleanser. So Seinfeld.
Yeah, and I it's not cool to name.
You're gonna go grocery store wars next?
No, I think I got my food show, and I was gonna go Top Chef, but once you've watched a season of Top Chef, you're kind of done with it. I've noticed that because my fiance has been rewatching some seasons that she hasn't seen, and if I know the end, it's just, it doesn't really hold my interest as much. And that's probably my favorite show non-drama. I love Top Chef. All right. My number three pick, I'm going to go with Band of Brothers. The HBO miniseries produced by, Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks. I will never tire of World War II content. I've watched it. I haven't watched it in a while, but I used to watch it like every year. I just think it's so fantastically well done. There's so many different great actors in it. Guys who were just at the start of their careers too. I just never tire of war content in general. I was thinking about trying to shoehorn in like the Ken Burns Vietnam War documentary, which is 18 hours long. So it's kind of almost like a series. Wow. Because I watch that thing every year, which my fiance loves that. It's very depressing and sad, but I don't know, for some reason it's tragic always, but I can never get enough of watching a war documentary or a movie and kind of trying to put myself through that. And generally I come up with, I just wouldn't go. I just wouldn't go over there, which is very unpatriotic, but it's just the way I feel. It's terrorizing. And it also makes you feel really great about that generation, those generations who lived through it.
Wow. That's very well said. And again, you are just really, I don't know if you're playing mind games with me, but you are
taking it to you.
Yeah, this is like a ripple effect. I'm feeling this. I'm questioning my draft board. I'm, kicking guys out of the room before the pick is made.
Making fires.
I don't want to answer the phone. Okay. And I know what everyone's going to say. Everyone on Twitter is going to be like, you didn't take The Sopranos. You didn't take Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
I can't. you know, even the wire is too heavy. Like, if I'm on a desert island, that's some heavy stuff. That's not an escape for me watching that. So I understand all of this. And this needs to be about quantity as much as I think quality. And I assume I'm getting everything under this umbrella. I want the Law and Order suite.
Wow. What a play.
Do I get SVU? Do I get the original?
No, you don't. I don't think so.
I don't?
I don't think so. That's a, I guess they're, I mean, they're tied in a bit, but that seems like a separate entity to me.
But I mean, if you went, okay, hang on.
I could be wrong.
Let me look on Wikipedia. So on Wikipedia, they have Law and Order as its own show. Then they have SVU. Okay, so Law and Order's 20 seasons are second only to SVU for the longest running live action scripted American
prime time series. Are 20 seasons not enough for you, Chris?
Okay, but if I have to pick one, I'm going to pick SVU.
Okay, fair enough. It's a bit more modern.
We'll have to take this to the people, though. I feel like I should get the entire.
Oh, geez.
Sweet.
Don't be greedy.
Like, I'll give you the U.S. and the U.K. office. How about that?
No, I want Band of Brothers and the Pacific, which is like Band of Brothers, but it's the Pacific Theater version of Band of Brothers.
I'll allow it. I'll allow it.
Then you can have Law and Order and SVU.
Okay. All right. And you could go anywhere with this last pick. I am eager to see what you come up with here.
I'm going back to the comedy well. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Which I actually might enjoy even more on an episode-to-episode basis than The Office. I think it's just so brilliantly funny and raunchy and smart, too, at the same time. And you love all the characters so much. And they just got renewed, I believe, in December for 4 more seasons, which will bring their total to close to 20. So there's a lot to work with there. And knowing those guys, like Charlie, not that I know them personally, but their personalities or the way I perceive their personalities, I think they're going to do that show for even longer than 20 seasons. So I'm going to have a lot to work with. Every episode is kind
of jumping.
You can kind of jump into little moments. And there are some of them that I probably didn't appreciate at the time that going back, I would like even more. There's just a lot to dive into there. And there's kind of a loose story, but every episode kind of has its own plot point, and you can really dive into there if you're needing to kill some time on a desert island, if you're needing to kill 23 minutes or however long it runs.
All right, I'm going to think similarly, and I'm not going to overthink this. I'm just going to pick what I think is one of the best, high upside, rewatchability is off the charts. I'm going to go Parks and Rec.
Yep, solid. That's a solid way to end it.
All right, so you've got The Office, Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, Band of Brothers / The Pacific and Always Sunny. I've got Breaking Bad, Seinfeld, The Law and Order Suite, and Parks and Rec. I was close to going, and this isn't even a guilty pleasure. I love it, and I haven't seen most of it. I was close to going like a Big Brother or a Survivor, just because I feel like you can appreciate the gameplay and the evolution of game. I'm not really into those shows. I've dipped my toe a bit into the water. I know there's rabid fan bases, but like, I feel like those are shows too where each season is standalone, but you can appreciate the evolution of gameplay over the course of the run of the show.
Yeah, whenever I've watched like Survivor sparingly and like The Real World and like The Challenge, and
I've gotten into Big Brother over the course of years because it's kind of strangely addictive.
It's totally something that I know that I would get locked into if I watched it. Even like The Bachelor, Bachelorette, I'm sure I would I would get to learn these people and root for them and make us.
But Triple D, come on.
Yeah, I mean, hell of a play, right?
Fieri.
Yeah.
Fieri.
Guy Fieri, Mount Rushmore of dudes who get too much crap by the media.
No, my younger brother, William, is right in line with your thinking, and will defend him to the absolute death. I mean, of course, he's an attorney in Chicago, but one of his passions in life is Guy Fieri. So you guys can know that there is a very loyal bunch of you guys who will fight for your guy.
And I'm not necessarily, I don't even know if I would want to hang out with him necessarily. I appreciate what he's.
It's like man versus food. Like, I don't want to hang out with that guy. He's kind of disgusting at his root, but like, you know, I appreciated what he did, and I'll stop on that show. I think he literally was ordered by a doctor to stop doing those challenges.
Oh my God. Just you bringing that up, I was thinking of how Anthony Bourdain used to make fun of that guy, and why didn't I go with a Bourdain show? No reservations or whatever.
You went triple D.
Oh no!
Well, there will be plenty of regret about our picks here, and we're going to get destroyed by people who just look at it and say, you know, that this is our ranking of best TV.
Yeah,
shows.
When you post this on Twitter, Chris, you kind of
I will. You and I will collaborate on the disclaimer that, but people don't even read. You know, the sentence disclaimer before they get angry about something. So I'm looking forward to people getting angry online about this.
I am too. Great draft
though, buddy.
Yeah, let's do it again soon.
Drew Silva, NBC Sports Edge. And, of course, check out the podcast Circling the Bases. Thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot.